we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Ticketmaster to require immunity passports for event attendance. DNS cache poisoning attacks are back. The EU wants to outlaw end-to-end encryption. And the Ethereum blockchain unexpectedly hard forks, hilarity ensues. That and more on Access of Easy number 172. Hey everybody, this is Mark Jeftovic with another episode of the Access of Easy Weekly Digest. Like I said, it's issue 172, and that means the show notes for this week will be at accessofeasy.com/172. Last week's quote was, "We are experiencing how history is being made and politics carried on with words that have no content. What is depressing is that there is little inclination to realize this very thing." As I predicted, nobody got it. It was Rudolf Steiner, the inventor of the Waldorf School, among many other things, in a series of lectures he delivered in 1917 about the spiritual sickness afflicting the world, the media distortions, and the propaganda that gave rise to World War I. I link to the book in the show notes page there. This week's quote is, "The smallest bookstore still contains more ideas of worth than have been presented in the entire history of television." You know the rules, no searching it up online, and the first person to post the correct source of the quote to the show notes page gets their next domain or web hosting renewal on us. Okay, so Ticketmaster released plans last week to require immunity passports for event attendance. Billboard carried the story, and it outlines how they plan to navigate the reopening of the economy by requiring event goers to either provide proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test taken within 24 or 48 hours of the event. And this signals the looming reality of the COVID vaccine becoming mandatory, if not legally, then in practice. Because if you can't go anywhere or do anything without being vaccinated, then it's de facto compulsory. The system would work by tying the Ticketmaster smartphone app into various health pass companies, which are basically immunity passports. Those are things like IBM's Digital Health Pass, the Clear Health Pass, or the Transnational Common Pass, and these are now a thing. So Ticketmaster, like most multi-sided platforms, they've got a near monopoly in their space, so that means if you object to the likes of Ticketmaster dictating your healthcare decisions or having access to your health records, you can't really just fall back and say, okay, so I'll never buy my tickets through Ticketmaster again because they've got a monopoly. So if you don't want to go along with this, you're basically saying, okay, so I'll never go to another entertainment or sporting event ever again. Okay, so the vaccine itself, I've been looking into this, not meaning to sound like an anti-vaxxer or anything, but it is the first mRNA vaccine that will ever have been produced. Most vaccinations take a decade or more to develop. This one was rushed out in under a year, although someone did point out to me that some pharma companies have been working on this type of vaccine since SARS, which made me feel a bit better about thinking around this. But Charles Hugh Smith did an excellent job looking at the ins and outs of these kinds of vaccines, and also a little more cold water on reality that the vaccine won't be the magic bullet to save the economy. Anyway, I linked to that in the show notes page as well. DNS cache poisoning attacks are back. So in a DNS cache poisoning attack, your victim can be sent to a fake website, in effect by overtaking or front-running the real DNS query responses sent by a name server, and you substitute a fake response that would connect them to a fake resource like a dummy website for your bank or your crypto wallet, whatever. This was discovered in 2008 by Dan Kaspersky, and it spawned one of the most frantic episodes of mass patching across the internet prior to, 2014 and Heartbleed, which was crazy in itself. Name server developers responded by adding things like source port randomization, and that dramatically raised the bar on cache poisoning. And then there's DNSSEC, which existed, but still hasn't really hit critical mass, and that cryptographically signs your DNS responses. That's the ultimate solution to this sort of thing. But it's still not widely deployed across the internet. And so now cache poisoning is back, at least theoretically. Researchers from Tsinghua University and the University of California presented a paper on a side channel attack that makes obtaining the source port of a DNS query possible again. The side channel itself, it's simple but brilliant. The researchers are figuring out which source port is being used by simply flooding the name server with fake queries very quickly, so it hits the max query allowed by the name server. They figure out which port sends back no response versus which port sends back a port unreachable error, and then they know which one is the actual port being used. After that, they have to still figure out the transaction ID, but there's ways to do that. Having the source port solves one of the big barriers to still being able to pull off a DNS cache poisoning attack. So, hat tip to John Senchak, who sent that to us via Facebook. Don't forget, we have Set and Forget Easy DNS Sec available on Easy DNS. If we're your registrar, it's a one-click process. It turns on DNS Sec for your domain and takes care of rolling over your keys and re-signing your zone when you modify it, that sort of thing, and putting the DS record into the parent TLD. The EC charges Amazon with antitrust violations. So the latest tech giant to be hit with an antitrust suit is Amazon, after the executive branch of the EU, which is the European Commission, charged them with abusing their market dominance to box out aspiring competitors. Again, it's Amazon's practice of acting as both the e-commerce storefront from which third parties sell products and a competitor. They use the data they glean from running the platform, and they create knockoff versions of the successful products and then undercut them. This process will play out over months, if not years. The next step gives Amazon the opportunity to respond. The EC has also initiated a parallel investigation into whether Amazon's Buy Box, which features prominently on the website and drives billions in revenues, gives preferential treatment to Amazon's own products. So we've been reporting on this for a while in Axis of Easy number 144, and in Axis of Easy 156, we looked at how sometimes Amazon would even go further. They would meet with founders to, quote, better understand your business model, and then instead of investing in the companies, they would just turn around and knock them off and create a product of their own. Also in the EU, they want to outlaw end-to-end encryption, so they created a draft council resolution on encryption entitled Security Through Encryption and Security Despite Encryption. And they try to pay lip service to the legitimate need for privacy and the ability to protect your personal and proprietary communications. Quote, "The principle of security through encryption and security despite encryption must be upheld in its entirety. The European Union continues to support strong encryption. Encryption is an anchor of confidence in digitization and in protection of fundamental rights and should be promoted and developed. Protecting the privacy and security of communications through encryption and at the same time upholding the responsibility for competent authorities in the area of security and criminal justice to lawfully access relevant data for legitimate, clearly defined purposes in fighting serious and/or organized crimes and terrorism, including in the digital world, are extremely important. Any actions taken have to balance these interests carefully," end quote. It still calls for some ability of law enforcement to be able to access encrypted communications, quote, "in a lawful and targeted manner in full respect of fundamental rights and the data protection regime while upholding cybersecurity," end quote. So one of our lawyers has an expression he is fond of using. He says, "You can't suck and blow at the same time." So if there's a way for any encrypted data to be accessed, lawfully, with air quotes around lawfully, or via any methodology other than the intended recipient decrypting it with the private key, then it isn't, by definition, strong encryption. It can't be. So that means if regulators actually move forward and mandate backdoors for lawful access into encryption, it will instantly criminalize everybody who then moves to an unsanctioned end-to-end encryption out of the same exigencies the EU has already recognized as being legitimate. So that way, our quote from the Axis of Easy number 147 will become a reality, which is, if privacy is outlawed, only outlaws will have privacy. And that was famously said by Phil Zimmerman, the creator of PGP. Ethereum unexpectedly hard forks, hilarity ensues. So they're calling it the most significant failure in Ethereum since the DAO hack of 2016. We linked to an article on Wired that it takes you through what happened back then. But that saw the blockchain permanently fork into two Ethereum chains. The other one is Ethereum Classic, which is still around today and the current sort of foremost chain. On November 11th, last week, large chunks of the Ethereum ecosystem sort of came unglued and began malfunctioning. Infura, MetaMask, MyCrypto, to name a few, stopped working, and so did the smart contracts and dApps that relied on them. Major exchanges like Binance hastily halted Ethereum trading. It turned out that Geth, an Ethereum client written in Go that's estimated to underpin upwards of 80% of all Ethereum applications, had a bug that split the blockchain in two, causing an unannounced hard fork. So the Ethereum teams released a postmortem on their GitHub, and it indicates that the event was traced to a bug introduced in a bug fix several months ago, which lay dormant until a transaction finally hit the blockchain on the 11th, which triggered the hard fork to happen. Ransomware group using Facebook ads to pressure victims. I saw this headline on Krebs on Security. I was expecting to see an article about ransomware gangs using Facebook ads to hijack users to some poison URL that would deliver an infected payload onto their computers, but it wasn't that at all. What it described instead was how hackers were using compromised Facebook accounts with advertising accounts attached to them to create and then run ad campaigns designed to shame victim companies into complying with their extortion demands. In this specific example, Krebs cites, it was the Italian corporation Campari Group. They were attempting to downplay the extent to which their customer data was compromised, and the ad started running across Facebook using a hacked business account of a Chicago-based DJ countering, quote, "This is ridiculous and looks like a big fat lie. We can confirm that confidential data was stolen, and we are talking huge volume of data," end quote. I'm frankly astounded that this made it past the Facebook ad approval process, because we just had an ad rejected last week that we were running for domain sure, which was like the most above board thing possible. And we had to go through a manual appeals process just to get them to actually understand that this wasn't some sort of dodgy, hacky ad. So I'm a little perplexed as to how that even happened. Anyhow, Google sued for unauthorized data transfers from Android devices. So a lawsuit filed by four separate plaintiffs across the USA seeks to be certified into a class action against Google over its use of customer data allowance for unauthorized and undisclosed data transfers. It's a unique take on confronting the search giant over its surveillance capitalism model, because there's numerous privacy cases dealing with how various big tech incumbents harvest data from their users, often without their knowledge or acquiescence. This one just goes straight to the unauthorized use of the customer's data allowances with their carriers. So they say there's no issue when all the data that Android devices send home to Google happens over Wi-Fi. What's not cool is that this happens when they're roaming or otherwise using their mobile carrier's cellular network. They have to agree to four agreements to enter the Google ecosystem: the terms of service, the privacy policy, and two others around the Google Play Store. None of them disclose that the device is going to be sending all of this data back to Google and chew up your data plan. Mac OS 11 removes your ability to avoid Apple surveillance. This one really pisses me off. I came across an essay by Jeffrey Paul called Your Computer Isn't Yours Anymore, talking about the additions to OS 11, Big Sur, which remove your ability to avoid Apple's surveillance. Quote, on modern versions of Mac OS, you simply can't power on your computer, launch a text editor or ebook reader and read or write without a log of your activity being transmitted and stored. End quote. Further, these thousands of updates your computer is emitting from you all the time, every single app you use, the IP address you're using it from, they traverse the network in the clear, so they're unencrypted, so everyone in the network path can see it. And then the requests hit a third-party provider in Akamai, which is a content delivery network Apple partnered with to cover their network layer across the world. And then Apple is a partner in the PRISM program, which is a U.S. military intelligence surveillance program first disclosed by Edward Snowden. The ramifications are that, quote, this data amounts to a tremendous trove of data about your life and habit and allows someone possessing all of it to identify your movement and activity patterns. For some people, this can even pose a physical danger to them. End quote. So now, currently, it's possible to block all these updates on Mac OS X using a program like Little Snitch, which I have installed. It's a small firewall you can use on your system. You install it, gives you control of all the outbound network traffic so you can block these little phone home requests from Apple or any other application on your computer. I have it installed. It's a bit of work to constantly approve data traffic and stuff, but at least you have the capability to do it in the past. With the new OS X 11, Big Sur, they've added new API calls that prevent Little Snitch from being able to block their traffic at the operating system level. And it gets worse. OS X 11 has new rules installed so that Apple apps will also bypass VPNs. That's the part that really made me crazy when I read that. So that's what Paul means when he says your computer is no longer your own. And it also means that I think I have to shop for a new laptop because, quite frankly, this is bullshit. Access of Easy Salon 30, we had the one, the only Doc Searles. He's the co-author of the Clue Train Manifesto, which helped define the internet ethos back in 98 or 99, whenever it came out. He also wrote The Intention Economy, which was a big book for me. I gave that book to every EasyDNS staff member for Christmas the year that came out. He's an alumni fellow with the Harvard University's Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society and the Project VRM leader and open source champion. It was a great talk, and tune in and check that one out. That would be it for this week. Once again, the show notes are at accessofeasy.com/172. And as always, stay safe, stay sane, stay healthy, and we will see you all next week. If your women burn in the clothes you wear, 1100 crushed in the panic on the stairs, the fire that's a thought that's using entrepreneurs. You gotta keep those women working, but you're looking good, I swear, that's Bangladesh. Rhymes with your fresh, you're just a whore.